Great to have you with us on the Ideas Network. Larry Mehler here. We're talking about Leopold Week to begin the show today. And a couple of guests for you. One is Buddy Huffaker, who is executive director of the Aldo Leopold Foundation. He's been with the organization for 20 years. Buddy, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Always a pleasure to be with you, Larry. Thanks for having us.
Well, the other guest is Scott Russell Sanders. Scott's an author, distinguished English professor at Indiana University, and Scott will be a featured speaker this Leopold Week. And Scott, thank you for joining us as well.
Thanks for inviting me.
Appreciate having you with us. So as we listen to these two folks talk, I hope you'll join in with your questions. How has Aldo Leopold influenced your life, perhaps? What other conservationists do you admire? Give us a call with your questions or comments. The number is 800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. Or you could email us, the email address ideas@WPR.org, ideas@WPR.org. Buddy, let's start with you. And maybe I think it's always useful to go back to talking about the foundation itself. Tell us about the Aldo Leopold Foundation.
Yeah, quick. Well, let's not assume everybody who has listened has heard of who Aldo Leopold is. He was an early environmentalist conservationist, professor at the University of Wisconsin, where he taught wildlife management, the first course ever offered in our country, as a result of a textbook he wrote titled Game Management in 1933. He's credited for everything from the creation of the wilderness movement to sustainable agriculture, ecological restoration, really just a visionary in helping us think about our relationship with the natural world. And the way most of the world knows Aldo Leopold is through his classic book, A Sand County Almanac, which was published a year after his death in 1949. So the foundation continues that work. We were established by the five children of Aldo and Estella Leopold, entrusted with the farm right outside of Baraboo, Wisconsin, where we continue to do ecological restoration and management. And then also as the executor of his literary estate. So we continue to ensure that his ideas and vision of a land ethic continues to inform and inspire conservation, not only here in Wisconsin, but across the world.
Yeah, it's a wonderful place to visit. What's the history of Leopold Week?
So Leopold Week is, we're approaching 25 years. It began in 2000 in the little town of Lodi, launched by Professor Tom Heberlein and some friends in an outfit called the Friends of the Scenic Lodi Valley. Basically, they were wanting to get outdoors for spring, but the weather wasn't quite nice enough yet in early March in Wisconsin, wet, muddy, sloppy. And so they decided instead to sit down together and read a Sand County Almanac aloud and at least commune over why they all cared about the natural world and wanting to get out to it. Started as that. They did that for a couple of years. It started to catch on. Communities all across the state participated. In 2004, then Governor Jim Doyle signed a proclamation recognizing the first weekend in March as Leopold Week. And so that's what we've continued. And then right before the pandemic, there were over 50 events in 12 different states across the country. Again, often including some portion of reading a Sand County Almanac, but also environmental service projects, river cleanups, what have you. And then the pandemic hit, recognizing that people still wanted to get together and talk about their care and concern for the natural world. We pivoted to a virtual format, and this will be the third year of free live virtual programming. And we've just been astounded by the interest, the energy, the participation. And so we got a great lineup this week. Starts at noon today with James Edwards Mills. And then this evening, Scott will join us and share his insights. And then we have other speakers throughout the rest of the week. So that's it's a tradition that kind of reveals and reflects Wisconsin's strong conservation heritage, but really now we're taking that message to the rest of the world.
And the this week there's always a theme, and this week's theme is nurturing and reciprocity. If I'm not, I'm pretty sure that's right. And how does maybe explain how that relates to land conservation?
Yeah, and I'll let Scott jump in here too, because I think his writing and thinking is just as profound as anybody's on this matter. But we plucked this theme from one of our guests, Robin Wall Kimmerer, who is our speaker on Thursday evening. And it's a concept in her new book, Braiding Sweetgrass. And it's really a recognition that we get so much from the natural world, all of our health and wealth, and kind of personal and communal joy. And so it's our recognition that we need to give back to each other and to nature in order for that relationship to truly be reciprocal and respectful. And what is really great is how approachable she helps us think about that. And the first step is just in recognizing and respecting the natural world. And then kind of finding ways that we can create positive feedback loops. But maybe I'll pause and hand it to Scott. And, you know, how do you define that? And how do you talk about that in some of your writings?
Yeah, go ahead, then, Scott.
In the foreword to a Sand County Almanac, one of many, many, many quotable passages in Aldo Leopold's work, he says, instead of seeing nature or the land as a commodity belonging to us, we should see it as a community to which we belong. In other words, nature is not just some raw material or dumping place, a raw material source and a place to dump our waste. The natural world is what made us. It's what feeds us. It's what we breathe. It's what we drink. It's what we're made out of. And therefore, we should be grateful, deeply grateful for the life that we have been given and the life that is sustained by the natural world. So if we think of ourselves as members of nature, members of the land community, rather than owners of it or exploiters of it, it's natural for us to feel a sense of gratitude. And the reciprocity that Robin Kimmerer will speak eloquently about later this week in her talk, the reciprocity is, as Buddy says, the giving back in gratitude for all that we have received from the earth and all that we continue to receive from the earth.
So many of your writings and your books deal with this area, Scott. How did that interest first develop within you?
Well, I'm old enough. I'm 77. I'm old enough to have grown up at a time when there were very few indoor distractions. I didn't see a television set until I was 12 years old. And of course, there were no computers, there were no laptops, no cell phones, no video games. So I spent most of my childhood outside. When I wasn't in school or wasn't eating meals, I was outside, summer, winter, all year round. This was in northeastern Ohio. So I imprinted on the earth. That is, I encountered the natural world the way humans have done throughout our evolutionary history. And as I grew up and studied science and studied literature, I realized that fewer and fewer people had the advantage of bonding with the natural world as I had. And so through my writing, I have tried to do in my own modest way, what Leopold did in a brilliant way, which was to convey a sense of my delight in the earth, my gratitude for the earth, the beauty and affection that I feel towards the earth, and the really glory of being an animal on this magnificent planet. So I write novels, I write short stories, but I write mainly essays about living on the earth and about our responsibility to care for this abundance that has nourished us, not just in our own lifetime, but throughout evolutionary history.
Yeah. Erica and Mercer has a comment for us. Let's go there. I think relates. Erica, hi.
Good morning. Yeah, it's still morning. My dad and my uncle Leroy knew Aldo Leopold, not real well, but and when I was 12, and I thought I had a 410 and a Springer Spaniel. I thought I was going to be a grouse hunter, and Uncle Leroy snookered me. He said, "Well, here's a book about grouse hunting," and so I was hooked on it. But it really, there's really not that much about grouse. But it is one of my favorite books. I read it at least once a year, just right on through. And my favorite passage or chapter will always be Autumn Gold.
Oh.
Larry, that reminds me of a passage by former chief of the U.S. Forest Service, Jack Ward Thomas, where he said once, "I read a Sand County Almanac every year on my birthday just to see what I've learned." And it's one of those books that is really great. You can come back to it over and over again, and you've grown, the world has changed, and so you're reading the words and seeing the world differently. And so I love that Eric shared that he does that and has that same ceremony.
Yeah, every year.
Sand County Almanac is a very seductive book. I admire it so much as a writer. It's in three parts. And the first part is the almanac part, where he's talking about nature observations. And when Aldo Leopold describes going out early in the morning before the sun is up and listening to the birds and deciding which bird sings first and at what time, and records all of that. And you're out there with him. You feel what it's like to be out listening to the birds, for example. Well, that's the first part of the book. The middle part of the book is about journeys, mainly to wilderness areas in the southwest of the United States and also into Mexico. And there he begins to talk more and more about the need to conserve wild places. And then the last part of the book, which is really the main reason people are still inspired and influenced by this book, the last part of the book he calls The Upshot, and it includes his most famous piece of writing, which is The Land Ethic, that essay. When he sent that book to publishers, they advised him to eliminate, to get rid of that last part. They said, it's too philosophical. People don't want to hear all this philosophical stuff. Just tell us the pretty stuff. Well, fortunately, he ignored the publishers. And he kept that last part in because it is really the culmination of all those earlier experiences. So when I say it's a seductive book, what I mean is you can ease your way into the book, and then it gets more and more demanding, not only of your attention, but of your conscience. You start having fun, then you take journeys with him. And then in the last essay of the book, he's saying, all right, now, given what I have told you, here is something we need to think about deeply. What is our responsibility as citizens of a community, a living community? And were he alive today and writing, he would, of course, be addressing climate disruption, biodiversity loss, all the things that are in the headlines and that are in all our minds. And, oh, Lord, I wish he were alive, because no one could have written about it more powerfully today than Aldo Leopold could have done in his prime.
Mm. Scott Russell Sanders, author, distinguished English professor at Indiana University, one of our guests, the other Buddy Hoffacker, executive director of the Aldo Leopold Foundation. We're talking with them about Aldo Leopold Week, which is going on right now, as a matter of fact, through the March 12th. And I hope you'll join in with your own thoughts, questions, and comments. Number to call is 1-800-642-1234, or you could email us, the email address, ideas@wpr.org. Trina LaSousa, our engineer today, Clara Neipert, our producer. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network. Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here as we discuss Aldo Leopold Week. The theme this year is nurturing and reciprocity. And our two guests, Scott Russell Sanders, author, distinguished English professor at Indiana University, and Buddy Hoffaker, who is executive director of the Aldo Leopold Foundation. Join in 800-642-1234, or you could email to ideas@wpr.org. What are your thoughts? Gordon in Oliva will give you a chance. Gordon, hi. Thanks for calling.
Well, thank you for taking my call. Such an appropriate subject for to have on your program. I spent my career in conservation and water cleanup and so on. And my concern is the lack of small farms that is left on the land and molding more towards Aldo Leopold's land ethic, and the lack of crop rotations, wildlife diminishing, increase in diseases, so on. And I would like to see smaller farms and smaller acreages with more small farmers on them. And
I thank you, Gordon, for calling. There's some comments from Buddy and Scott as well. Buddy, start with you.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's one of the challenges we're facing in contemporary times is as things keep scaling up and getting bigger, the challenges of maintaining that connection to the natural world and thus that sense of reciprocity and giving back. And I think it does become more challenging as we get more disconnected from the natural world. There's kind of a interesting phenomenon. I think this is still continuing in Wisconsin that we're actually, while farms are getting bigger, we're actually creating more farms. So we do have a new effort of a renaissance, if you will, of small farms, community supported agriculture. These are very different in scale than kind of the more traditional agricultural systems now, but creating new opportunities for people to connect, to produce food for themselves and their community. And Wisconsin is a leader in that, grows out of that Lafarge area with Organic Valley and the kind of roots that run deep there, but it's happening across the state. There's a new organization called the Savannah Institute down by Spring Green that is looking at what they would call perennial polyculture in agricultural landscapes that grows out of the work that Wes Jackson has done at the Land Institute. So we get these kind of, I think on the whole, we're becoming more disconnected. Scale is becoming a challenge, but you do continue to see these pockets and this continued effort to maintain those relationships and create new kind of ecological and economic relationships with the land.
Yeah. Scott, a comment?
One of the many reasons Leopold is important for us to read today was because he was a Midwesterner. And I say that as a Midwesterner. He studied in New England as an undergraduate at Yale and then a graduate student at Yale. But New England is not an agricultural area. He spent his early years working for the National Forest Service in the Southwest, Arizona, New Mexico, also not an agricultural area. And in those areas, most of the land is owned, or much of the land is owned publicly by state and federal agencies. In the Midwest, the overwhelming proportion of land is owned by individual landowners, not by government. And so Leopold, and most of that is in farmland because of the blessings of the glaciers, deep soils, and also adequate rainfall. So Leopold knew that if he was going to advocate for the protection of land in the Midwest, he had to appeal to landowners. He wasn't a great believer in the power of government to protect the lands. He had seen a lot of bad management of public lands in the Southwest. I agree with the caller that we need smaller farms, farms where the farmer lives on the land, doesn't just rent the land, and hopes to have his or her children and grandchildren living on that land. In other words, sees it as a long-term commitment to a place. corporate, large-scale corporate farms simply do not have that long-term perspective. Their perspective is short-term profit. And so the land is more likely to be taken care of on a small scale and a personal scale where the farmers are engaged long-term with the land. It is encouraging to hear what Buddy says about the proliferation of farmers markets, community supported agriculture, and so forth in Wisconsin. The same thing is happening in my home state of Indiana and elsewhere. People want wholesome food. They also want people on the land because they know, as Wes Jackson says, we need eyes on the land, not satellite eyes, not just huge farm equipment. We need human caretakers looking at the land and looking after the land.
Yeah, and just as an aside comment, I had the Secretary of Wisconsin Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection on, and he said the average size of farms in Wisconsin is about 200 acres. I think it's actually 5 or 10 acres lower than it was in 1960. So Buddy's comments are, and yours, Scott, are there's quite a bit going on under the radar, I think, sometimes that is good for all of us. Tyrone in Milwaukee, we'll give you a chance. Thank you for calling.
Yes, sir. Good afternoon, Larry. Good afternoon, gentlemen. Good afternoon, everyone that's in the sound of my voice. Tyrone W. speaking. Good to be in this conversation with you. Gentlemen, I appreciate what I'm hearing as far as the knowledge. Hope to be able to come across some of the books that are out there available to this this individual, Mr. Leopold. It sounds like, you know, since we have so many different indigenous tribes and some of everybody from coast to coast, well, let me just say that, you know, our farmers have been beat up. You know, I think I mentioned to Jill several weeks back, for every tree that we cut down, we should plant 10, because a lot of those trees, out of that 10, 5 probably won't make it because of disease and stuff there. And then we have to have the fill-in for the animals and stuff to eat off of and have their forestry, you know. So for every tree that we cut down, we need to plant 10. That's why I'm very thankful for what the Bucks are doing, you know, a tree planted for every three-pointer that they make there. But very quickly here, and I'll finish with this. It reminds me there, we're only stewards of this. We don't own anything. We're not going to take none of it with us. It's going to consume us. You're right there. We don't own any of it. We belong to the indigenous people have made me learn that we belong to the planet. The planet, we don't own anything. We don't belong. It doesn't belong to us. We belong to it.
Well, Tyrone, I thank you very much for calling. Let's get comments from both Scott and Buddy, perhaps. Buddy?
Well, it's hard to say much better than Tyrone did. I think he's absolutely right. And, you know, that we need to be planting trees. We need to be planting prairie. We need to be planting window boxes with flowers and vegetables. We just need to be greening everywhere we can. And understanding that the climate disruption that we are experiencing, we're going to need more ways to capture that. And the benefits are that we get cleaner water, we get cleaner air, we hold soil better. So more trees, more prairie, more vegetable gardens.
Yeah. Scott?
Elder Leopold and his wife and his 5 children planted thousands of trees on the 120 acres of farmed out land along the Wisconsin River that they bought in 1935 in the depths of the Depression and in the midst of the Dust Bowl. He was a great believer in the planting of trees. And if anyone who goes to that land now can see that the forest was so thick that trees it had to be thinned out, and some of the trees that they had planted and matured were cut down and have been incorporated into the really beautiful buildings that the Leopold Foundation has put on that land. In the 1930s, Leopold's land ethic was formulated in the midst of the most severe damage that up to that time the United States had ever experienced, the severe land damage, the famous Dust Bowl. The first major effort at restoring a watershed by the brand new Soil Conservation Service of the United States took place in southwestern Wisconsin in Coon Valley. And if you had seen photographs of the erosion of the Coon Creek, you would see how desperately degraded the land had become. And through cooperation between labor provided by the Civilian Conservation Corps, which at the time included two of Alder Leopold's sons, the cooperation between government employees, the Civilian Conservation Corps, private landowners, and local people, to restore an entire watershed. It was a demonstration project of what's possible, and a lot of it involved tree planting. The Civilian Conservation Corps planted over 3 billion, that's a billion with a B, trees, between 1935 and 1942. And that included a shelter belt that was 1,300 miles long from North Dakota to Texas to cut down the wind crossing the Great Plains and to keep soil on the ground and to keep farmers on their farms. The United States has done great things in the past to conserve its resources and to restore damaged landscapes. We can do it again. It's being done on local scale, small scales. The Leopold Foundation itself has been, and maybe Buddy will tell us about this, has been doing some very important restoration on the land that it controls near Baraboo. Do you want to say anything about
Buddy,
restoration?
Yeah, that'd be great, Buddy.
Sure. Well, a couple things. One, also, as Scott was mentioning, the Leopold family's work that they launched in the 30s and connecting to Tyrone's point. I mean, they planted thousands and thousands of pine trees, and for the first 5 years, they had nearly 100% mortality as the drought persisted. But they came back out there that fifth year and planted 3,000 more trees, and then again and again. And now we have a lush pine, a red and white pine forest that, in fact, we're just this week starting another thinning to ensure that the remaining pines are healthy and vigorous. And so that work continues on that historic site, which is now a National Historic Landmark because of its connection to the effort of ecological restoration and inspiring a Sand County Almanac. But we continue to do work not only on our own property, but on private land adjacent to us, on state land downriver from us. So there's about a 12,000 acre, an important bird area that we helped coalesce these different partners. And then there's a subset of that that's about 4,500 acres where we are predominantly managing for grassland birds that are really suffering because of changes in agricultural practices and agricultural policy and habitat loss. Grassland birds are struggling more than any other guild of species. So if you think of meadowlarks and dick thistles and bobolinks, and in particular, Henslow sparrows that need even bigger chunks of habitat to breed. Those are the suite of species that we're trying to ensure have a refuge. And so we've been doing actually some tree thinning and prescribed burning and invasive species control to try to ensure that those species have critical habitat as they're losing breeding areas elsewhere. So that is work that will be featured on our site and in our programmings over the next couple of months. And so folks that are interested in that should stay tuned and come see us to see what that work looks like on the ground.
And, you know, I don't think I'm not sure that I brought this up before, but I want to be sure that people know how they can get involved and participate in this week. Aldo Leopold Week, because, I mean, it's going to be easy, relatively easy for anybody to participate.
We try to make it as easy as possible. And the easiest place to go is our website, aldoleopold.org. You'll see information about Leopold Week and upcoming programs. But But yeah, Leopold Week is starting right after this. James Edwards Mills, the author of The Adventure Gap and the director of the Joy Trip Project, will talk about creating an inclusive outdoors for everyone. Brings great energy and insights to how to make the outdoors accessible no matter where you come from, and ensuring that conservation is, in fact, an inclusive community. So he will speak at noon, and so you can register. This is all live and free. We're just a few registrations short of 5,000 for this whole week. So that'd be my request to the listening audience, is sign up, become part of the team and community, and put us over that goal. And then tonight, you'll get to, at 7 o'clock Central Time, Scott will join us as the featured speaker, particularly speaking from his work, Conservationist Manifesto. And let me digress just a sec. I mean, Scott talked about the unfortunate reality that Mr. Leopold's still not with us and still writing. But that's what Leopold Week is about, is bringing those voices that continue that message. Leopold himself, at the end of a Sand County Almanac, wrote, "I have presented the land ethic as a product of social evolution because nothing so important is ever written." And so he, you know, he predicted and expected that there would be new champions that would take this cause up. And nobody is more eloquent and thoughtful than Scott. So I've had lots of opportunities to spend time with Scott in the field, in conversation. And really, you should join tonight to hear somebody who really reflects the kind of voice, thinking, and depth of care that Aldo Leopold did. I mean, Scott Russell Sanders is the Leopold incarnate in 2023. So tonight at 7, Scott will be with us. And then Wednesday night, we have Delia Owens, the author of Where the Crawdads Sing. If anybody has, well, over 18 million people have read that book now all across the world. It's an amazing surprise bestseller. It's been on the New York Times bestseller list for 4 years. And she has an amazing story about what motivated her to write that book. And it was largely a Sand County Almanac. She wanted people to read Leopold. And many of her friends would start and say, it's a little dry, it's a little slow. So she packaged a mystery and romance around nature writing, really with the intent to get more people to recognize that we need to care about wild places. So you can join Delia 7 o'clock on Wednesday night. And then Thursday evening, Robin Wall Kimmerer, the author of Braiding Sweetgrass, another New York Times bestseller, recently recognized as a MacArthur Fellow, an amazing author, got her PhD actually at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, and live next to the Arboretum and strolled there and visited there regularly, now teaches at SUNY University. But again, an eloquent writer on this concept of reciprocity. And then we end Friday at noon with our Leopold Fellows. So these are young people that have spent a year with us, had the same kind of experience that Aldo Leopold's grad students and children did, bonding with the natural world, learning about it, learning how to take care of it. So they'll share what they've learned and where they're at in their journeys and where they hope to head. And I know, Larry, you guys have a program on hope coming up. If you want to be hopeful, join for this program with these young people, because they have so much energy and care and commitment and ability. It's really exciting to hear where they're at and where they're going. So again, quickly, aldoleopold.org. Everything is free. It's live. If you sign up but can't be there, you'll get a link to watch it later. So you can go back and listen to Scott over and over again. We have programs that start right on the heels of this program and run through the rest of the week.
And Scott, it sounds like a fabulous week. And I imagine you're going to talk, what, land ethic?
Well, I'm going to talk about earth ethic.
Earth ethic.
If Aldo Leopold were with us today, he would be thinking about restoration, conservation on a global scale, which any thoughtful person today knows we must do. And so I'll be talking about how Leopold's conception of land ethic can be and needs to be extended to embrace the whole planet, the biosphere, the oceans, the atmosphere, the land, all the plants and animals that we share it with. So that's what I'll be talking about tonight, but I'll also be talking a lot about how Leopold arrived at his vision of our ethical as well as ecological responsibility to care for the earth.
Well, it's what a fantastic lineup. And once again, if people were listening, buddy, and they, where do I have to go again to get signed up for this?
Go to the Leopold Foundation website, www.aldoleopold.org, or type in Leopold Week. You'll get to the link, and you can join us for the events that you can join live, or you'll get a link to watch any of the programs at your leisure.
Well, it has been a great pleasure to have a chance to talk with both of you. And I'm looking forward to hearing the talks, and I'm sure a lot of other people are as well. Buddy Scott, thank you so much for taking time to be with us today. Really appreciate it.
It was a pleasure.
Thanks, Larry. And look forward to seeing everybody at Leopold Week.
Buddy Hoffecker, Executive Director of the Aldo Leopold Foundation. He's been there for 20 years now. Scott Russell Sanders, author, distinguished English professor at Indiana University. Take a look at his, go online to his site there. You'll see the books that he's written. I want to get his latest one, which came out last year, but I haven't read it yet. But I will. Small Marvels. That's the one that I'm looking forward to getting a copy of. Thanks to both of them, and thanks to you for listening. And we're going to switch gears just a little bit here and take a look at mathematics. The field of mathematics has a very colorful history. Did you know that? I didn't really know that until I started looking at what our next guest has been doing, Holly Attenborough. She's our next guest. I'm Larry Mueller. Stay with us on the Ideas Network.